Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Investments. Complicated? Not when you talk to a financial broker about a Zurich investment plan.
Harry Potter writer J.K. Rowling and Midnight's Children author Salman Rushdie are among 150 public figures, including John Banville, to have signed a letter condemning the practice of public shaming, or cancel culture as it's known popularly. Is it the case that cancel culture is out of control? You can't say anything anymore without getting pilloried. Or is it really just powerful people finally being held accountable for their actions? Philip Boucher-Hayes has this report.
Natalie Wynne is a trans woman who's a creator on YouTube, frequently posting on gender politics and marginalisation of trans people. You might think that she would be the kind of person who would be more or less immune from being cancelled. But she has actually been, and by other members of the trans community, more than once.
I made a video where I had a voice actor, Buck Angel, a trans man who's an adult performer, read a line from John Waters' book.
Mm-hmm. One must remember, there is such a thing as good bad taste and bad bad taste. To understand bad taste, one must have very good taste.
Made remarks online that were thought by some non-binary people to be exclusionary. Buck Angel was cancelled, and by association, because she didn't condemn him, Natalie was cancelled too.
I used 10 seconds of his voiceover in a 48-minute video, but that's enough for people to associate him with me so that I'm guilty of his sins unless I publicly condemn every bad thing he's ever tweeted.
But it didn't stop with Natalie's cancellation. Her friends were guilty by association with her.
Once you accept the logic that someone who has a minor association with someone else is accountable for everything that person has done, you can build these kind of chains of guilt by association, which get honestly like comical. At this point, your head starts to spin because you can't even keep track of who's guilty of what and why.
F*** her and f*** her f***. Rift. I am absolutely furious right now.
Natalie made a YouTube video reading some of the tweets calling for her cancellation.
I just want to say, ContraPoints, her sycophantic stance, and all her bread tube chums who close ranks to protect her after she throws the rest of the trans community under the bus for profit. Natalie Wynne is a grift.
The wounds of being cancelled were not primarily professional or financial. She still has nearly a million people subscribing to her YouTube channel. She still posts content that is funny, smart, and critically well received, and people still donate to her channel on Patreon. For Natalie, cancellation by people she considered to be in the same community as her was primarily an emotional wound.
When you're being trashed by people who are supposedly on your side, it undercuts your self-worth at a very fundamental level, and it's so profoundly isolating because the people who are your allies have said that you're bad and have cast you out. Other people become afraid to associate with you. It's almost like having leprosy or something. And that's a very depressing experience.
In the cancel culture that Natalie was a victim of, dissent and disagreement are much more difficult. People are much more likely to stay stum than share a view that would land them in permanent social exile. It's the tyranny of moral absolutists who will only tolerate seeing their own views being reflected back to them. But that is only one part of cancel culture. Cancel culture emerged from something very different and much more positive.
I'm not going nowhere. I can't come out here to be with you. I'm not going nowhere.
Get away from me. You canceled.
Canceled?
You got me.
The moment in 2014 when the VH1 reality series Love and Hip Hop first popularised the phrase, you're cancelled. Prior to that, call-out culture had existed largely on social media platforms like Tumblr, where threads like your fave is problematic pointed out the celebrities or the companies and brands with racist or sexist or exploitative stances. It was very much a case of punching up, marginalised people holding the wealthy and influential to account, and it found its strongest voice on Black American Twitter.
There's this thing happening right now on Twitter, hashtag unmutiny. There's also something called hashtag everyday, and then the Broadway actors that are Black and brown created hashtag we see you. So there's all these people coming together saying enough is enough. And I think that what people forget is that no one is asking for better or more. We're asking for equal.
The Venn diagram of where cancel culture moved on to, though, has become very blurred. On the one hand, it fueled a lot of the righteous anger behind the Me Too and the Black Lives Matter movements. The rich and powerful could now face censure in the public square or even social exile for positions that had previously gone unchallenged. But there was also a performative, purer-than-thou element to cancel culture, searching through the back catalogue of white male comedians for offensive jokes, of which there were, of course, plenty.
The people that complain and all that type of shit is just, it's a very small group of people and they're bullies.
Some of these mostly privileged white men didn't understand that we had entered an age of disruption where the previously unaccountable were now being held to account and they reacted badly, further fueling the perception that they considered themselves immune to criticism.
Every one of those things, it's like a comic is guilty of telling a joke in a comedy club. That's all they're guilty of,
right?
But equally, some comedians weren't wrong when they pointed out that much of the criticism was really going a long way out of its way to be offended.
And when you're around super sensitive people, you cannot relax and be spontaneous because you have no idea what's going to upset them next.
John Cleese.
And that's why I've been warned recently, don't go to most university campuses, because the political correctness has been taken from being a good idea to the point where any kind of criticism of any individual or group can be labelled cruel.
Last year was the year that cancel culture lost its coherence. Now it is as much about punching down as punching up. Well-placed criticism can be dismissed as the baying of the unjust mob, but equally the mob frequently turns on those undeserving of a public shaming. A slide into messy, illogical confusion, not helped by the man who has called for more cancellations than anyone else, turning around and repositioning himself as the defender of free speech against cancel culture.
We want free and open debate, not speech codes and cancel culture.
Barack Obama weighed in on cancel culture recently too. It's not proper activism, he suggested.
You know, this idea of purity and you're never compromised and you're always politically woke and all that stuff, that's not activism. That's not bringing about change.
Which is not to say that cancel culture is all bad. If there is one thing that appears to have changed permanently, it is that for the rich and powerful, the well-worn forgiveness formula of insincere apology and public contrition no longer works. The public now have the tools to pronounce judgment. It just has to work out how to use those tools justly and fairly.
And that report from Philip Boucher-Hayes.